You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
The financial collapse of a biofuel project in rural Tanzania is being raised as a cautionary tale about foreign investment in large agricultural projects or land grabs in Africa. When Sun Biofuels, based in the UK, went bankrupt last year, it had dire effects on the project that they had instigated in the district of Kisarawe a few years before. Kisarawe is located about 70 kilometers southwest of Dar es Salaam, and most local people are engaged in agriculture. The Oakland Institute has prepared a case study of the failed project that has changed life for the people living in the district of Kisarawe. Frederick Musso is policy director at the Oakland Institute. He's the author of the report, and he joins me now. Hello, Frederick.
Hello, good morning. How are you?
I'm very good. Now, before Sun Biofuels went bankrupt, the project was already well underway. How had the project affected the local area? Just create a picture for us of how the development changed the environment and economy in the district of Kisarawe up to that point.
Of course. So this is rural Africa. Most people there are small farmers. They have small exploitations. They rely a lot also on the exploitation of natural resources around their villages, such as grazing land, such as forests for wood and fuel. So we have small villages. We have actually 11 villages in the area taken by the company. And all the people there were mainly farmers, relying on this natural resources, including water. And this is an important point, because one of the big assets that the company took was water.
What kind of promises were made to the villagers prior to the project?
So when the company arrived, they claimed they were going to bring roads, infrastructures, hospitals, pharmacies. Basically, they were going to bring development. And we are in a place where people are generally in a quite a deep level of poverty, with very little development of infrastructures, very little access to basic services. So when they see especially this white man coming from England arriving with all these promises, sometimes they even believe they might be related to NGOs or people coming to really do development. And so they tend to believe what they are promised. And they have all these promises of infrastructures and development, but above all, they have promises of jobs. And what the Sun Biofuel, the company, promised initially was 1,500 jobs for the people there. And so farmers decided to abandon their land, give the resources they had, so they will have this development that they have heard of, that people enjoy in Europe and elsewhere, with all these infrastructures, with good money coming in every month. They thought it was a good deal for them.
It sounds like a bit of an ideal promise. What was that? What did that consultation process look like?
So that's very interesting, because Tanzania is a country where the government claims that there's a good recognition of land rights, and by law, companies such as Sun Biofuel are required to go into consultation with local communities and to get the approval from local communities before starting such a project. But what we see in practice is a consultation process which is really one side. The company comes and tells all these benefits that people are going to enjoy, and don't say what they're going to lose, and don't say what are the risks for them when they give away their land this way. And it's really an asymmetric information that is provided just to convince people that they have to give the land. And unfortunately, it's not just the company. The government is, and sometimes local government officials, are very supportive of the company and really try to promote projects like this one among villagers and local communities. So it's not just that they hear from the foreign company that things are going to be good for them. It's also the government which is pushing for it. So this is a kind of consultation, and people we've talked to in Tanzania say, for us, it was mainly information. It was not really a consultation. It was not really an objective discussion on the project. And at the end of this consultation, there was nothing written. There was no real contract about all these infrastructures and jobs that were going to come, and no real way to keep the company or the government accountable for what was being promised.
Sun Biofuels was unable to raise the final capital needed to see the project to completion, and they declared bankruptcy just a little over a year ago in the summer of 2011. What happened then?
The situation was already bad because the company had started. They wanted 8,000 hectares, and they had started working on 2,000 hectares, and they were already operating with 600 people hired on the project, basically farm workers. And it's low-paid farm workers and security people working on the plantation, and so they had taken away. They had developed only 2,000 hectares, but they had taken away this lot of 8,000, and people had already given away their land, given away their water, and suddenly they find themselves without a job. 600 people dismissed overnight. So this expectation of getting salaries and monthly income just disappeared overnight. But at the same time, the land that they had given away has not been returned to them. So they have lost their land, they have lost their water, and the water is important. Today, the people there have to go for kilometers to find water, to find wood, because the area that has been taken by the company, even after the bankruptcy, has been kept fenced and protected by security guards who don't allow the farmers and villagers to access the land they have lost. So they have lost everything, and the situation is terrible today because they have lost not only the jobs and whatever they have started to gain from the project, but they have lost also what they have given away prior to the project, and today the frustration and the anger from the villagers is enormous.
Let's go a little more deeply into the water situation. What would be the day-to-day effect on villagers or people living on the land not now having access to these scarce water supplies?
Well, we have to imagine it is not Sahelian Africa. It's not we are not close to any desert. This is a very green part of Africa, where usually people have access to fresh water, safe water in these rural areas quite easily, and so people used to have streams and wells and access to water around them that was freely accessible, very very close to their houses and villages. Now, giving away this land and the water, what many people in the villages have to do is to go and walk for sometimes 30 minutes, 1 hour, to 2 hours to find fresh water. And if you don't do that, you have to buy the water. And suddenly they find themselves having to buy the water to people who have just developed it as a business to bring water from one point to another. So some people had jobs, but a good share of their salary now had to go into buying water and buying wood and buying a lot of things that they used to have freely in the past. It is both the income that has now disappeared, but also this source of free access to natural resources, which is gone.
Now, Tanzania, as you mentioned earlier, has says that they tend to consult on land rights, but they also have this strategy called Kilimo Kwanza. How does that encourage agrofuel investment, these large agricultural investments?
Okay, Kilimo Kwanza means in Swahili agriculture first, and it is an initiative launched by the president of Tanzania, the current president, to develop agriculture in the country. But unfortunately, the strategy taken by the government and the president is to not just develop agriculture, is to develop large-scale plantations, large-scale industrial farming, and to welcome industrial corporations, from especially foreign corporations, to come and develop these plantations. So while the country is made of 60-70% of small farmers and pastoralists, and there are many pastoralists in Tanzania, the Maasai are very famous for that, and they are one of the main victims of this land grabbing because they have little title on their land. So the government is not developing agriculture, and agriculture first is not for these farmers and pastoralists, but for this, mainly for these foreign corporations. And the law requires some level of consultation, but there is also a massive extent of grabbing, where people are really pushed away from their land in different ways, with intimidation, with false promises. Former refugees, as we have seen in other parts of the countries who had been settling there for a long time, are being removed as well. So it's really pushing the people from their land to give access to industrial industries coming from outside, including in particular this energy firms coming from the UK and elsewhere.
Frederick, what lessons do you think we can draw from this story of Sun Biofuels collapse and the repercussions for Tanzanians?
There are many lessons we can draw, obviously, because today we have been looking at many land deals and this issue of land investments in the developing world and in Africa in particular. And so, sometimes we are accused of being anti-development, to go against the progress and to want to keep villages in their heads. But what we see with this story is very cautionary tale, as you said earlier. It is very dangerous for any country, any community to hand over the keys of your future, of your welfare, to a foreign corporation who sometimes you don't even know who controls it, who manages it, and who can just go bankrupt overnight, who can just decide to go to change its business from a day to another, depending, here we're talking about energy, depending on the oil prices, the company might decide that it is worth or not to continue to do this kind of business. And all communities, like we have dozens of villages, we have thousands of people who suddenly just decide to hand over this future to a foreign investor. It's scary, and I don't think we would do that in the Western world. And this is not the way we have developed our agriculture or economy. And this need for control, autonomy, sovereignty over your resources and your future, I think is key, and this should be learned by the government there. The second aspect, which is very essential, is this question of consultation. Even when we are talking about consultation, and the World Bank and others have put this nice principle on some of the guidelines to investors and governments, we see that even when it is on paper, even when there are some consultations happening on the ground, this asymmetric access to information and understanding between rural communities and foreign investors who come from their business schools in Europe or North America creates a big gap and big power imbalance in the negotiations that are taking place there. So we should really rethink this question of consultation and basically protect much better the rights of the people and do much better at informing them and letting them understand what is really at stake when they have a negotiation like this one. We have also another lesson, which is about this energy business that has been really exploding since 2008 when gas prices went very high. Many companies went into biofuels, many countries went into biofuels, and we see with this project that Jatropha, which is a shrub that was used for this project, was touted as a miraculous plant that was going to use marginal land and going to have wonderful yields. We see that companies go bankrupt with that and leaving communities in this dire situation. So we are really launching a warning on the biofuel side, especially since the U.S. and European countries are very strong promoters of biofuels today. They have subsidies, they have mandates, and they are really pushing and helping this industry to take place, including in Africa, including at the expense of the rural populations and the poorest people in the world. So today we have a really strong responsibility in the West, with our green mandates and our green objectives, we do destroy livelihoods and we do destroy lives in the South, and we and this need to stop.
Frederick, I really appreciate your joining me and helping us gain some insight into this particular situation.
Thank you very much for having me.
Frederick Musso is Policy Director at the Oakland Institute. He's the author of a report analyzing the disastrous consequences of the collapse of a UK-based biofuel project in Tanzania.